Log Talk Radio.
Great joy and good afternoon, my friend. The Nepalese meditation bowl is chiming, centering your mind and delight on the art of the CEO. The show that brings you the wisest counsel and the most fascinating people in the business community from all around our terrestrial orb. I am Bart Jackson, your Hieronymus Bosch of business. And you can look that one up. And here's today's question. Don't think, just say it out loud, first thing in your mind. What is the most beneficial use of technology? Well, did you fumble a bit? Did you have to think? Well, whatever your answer, I am sure that we can today, if you'll forgive the term, trumpet. In the snap of a texting thumb, we are going to introduce to you to Mr. Sheldon Himmelfarb, founding CEO of the Peace Tech Lab. It's a dedicated coterie that deftly blends data, media, cell phones, and scores of technologies with a powerful flame of human creativity to quell hate and halt violent conflict. Peace Tech is really growing an exciting army of entrepreneurial folk, and they're building peaceful enterprises around the world. In fact, at last count, Peace Tech has trained over 1,300 organizations in 16 countries to help bring to fruition 36 startups that disrupt the cycle of violence. The dogs of war no longer are sole possessors of technology's massive powers. So whether you're seeking some ray of human hope that's going to get us all on the right track, or you're merely just enchanted by the inventive cleverness of what we Homo sapiens can constructively build, pull up your chair and join us in this feast of wisdom, all carefully cuisined to make your career thrive and your ventures flourish. Sheldon, I'm so glad that you can honor us with your insights and make a visit to the Art of the CEO part of Peace Tech Lab's 5th anniversary celebrations.
Hey there, Bart. It's a pleasure to be here. Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely. Everything is just fine from way down there in Washington, D.C., which they say is 12 square miles surrounded by reality. Sheldon.
I'm going to use that one, Bart.
All right. Sheldon, just... I've got to ask, what is waging peace? I mean, I know what waging war is. You define your enemy, you define your goals, you gather your forces, deploy them, and attack and disrupt on all fronts. But how do you campaign for the absence of war?
Well, Bart, you know, it is absolutely as systematic in approach to building peace as it is a systematic an approach to trying to wage war. A lot of work has been done on this topic across the last 50, 75 years, especially to understand it within the context of this broad category that we call conflict resolution and peace building, or conflict management and peace building. So how do you do it? We think of it in terms of a system. What does peace look like? Peace requires, essentially, broadly speaking, 5 end states. You need rule of law. You need social well-being. You need a sustainable economy. You need security. And you need stable governance. Now, within those 5 broad rubrics, those 5 end states, you find everything from, you know, access to legislators, access to equal justice, ability to finance businesses in an equitable fashion, and so forth. So, but the point is, Bart, those are the 5 ingredients, if you will, the DNA of the conflict. And when any of those things are out of alignment, you have the possibility of conflict, violent conflict,
right?
Of
violent conflict.
War at the end of the day.
Well, I know that previously, you said there's been much in the past half century, but previously peace building really and ending violence has been kind of an oral effort. I mean, using well-crafted words to preach against it and to negotiate workable treaties. And so here you come along with Here's Sheldon Himmelfarb saying, well, there's more we can use, the magnificent untapped power of technology. Give me just one example of how this works.
Yeah. Well, first, let me just add one more point to that sort of framework that you've just described. You know, if you think of peace in terms of prevention of violence, it's not so different than thinking about, you know, health prevention. You know, in the old days, we used to try to run really, really hard at only treating the disease in the health area.
Yeah.
Same thing with conflict. We would run really, really hard at only, ending the violence, temporarily ending the violence, anything you could do to end the violence. But now we think of it more broadly as I told you in that kind of systems framework, think of it as what do you need to have a healthy society? What are those ingredients? Mm. So if you think of it in that framework, there's lots that can be done using tech and otherwise in order to tackle the various drivers of violence, the various things that prevent your society from being healthy. So I love to give one really clear example here, Bart, to make it all come alive.
Okay.
I think you can probably draw the straightest line between technology and technology's advancement. I think you probably draw the straightest line between technology and violence prevention when you look at elections of the last decade, for example.
Okay.
Elections historically, especially in fragile states, elections have been a flashpoint for violence.
Yes, true.
Well, our team participated in Kenya in the 2017 elections with a number of local partners and other organizations to build and operate an SMS-based, a text-based early warning and response system for preventing violence. It was called Jishi Niamani. And it provided a way to text in rumors or eyewitness accounts of voter fraud or interference or just trouble that was brewing, gangs that were gathering around a polling place, which may be simply gathering because, as we learned in some instances, they'd run out of ballots and nobody had gotten the ballots and it was a blisteringly hot sun and somebody had to alert the right people to go get the ballots. But, you know, you have the – how did we hear about it? Well, we have the power of these text messages. We have what people in country right there at that polling place are posting on Twitter. And you're getting that immediate real-time feedback so that you can intervene and prevent these incidences from spiraling out of control. And I will say there's a lot of great work that has been done by many, many people in many places around using tech to create social media tracking centers at times of elections so that you're, you know, having a good look at what's being said on Facebook and on Twitter so that you can intervene early. It's just been a really exciting space to watch for me for the last 10 years to see how technology has managed to help prevent violence in these flashpoints.
Sheldon, this leads me to something I've heard you say, and I've really picked up on it as you say that technology has given us an opportunity to democratize peace building. It can get every citizen and soul affected in there, and I think that that's what you just showed in that. Example, it goes out. The word goes out to everybody, and they understand what's going on, and that brings it. It seems to me as if your PeaceTech Exchange, which is one of the flagship elements of the lab, is an excellent example about this. Could you give us a little bit, first of all, about what the PeaceTech Exchange is and how it sets up and works? How's that function?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a 1-2 punch here, Bart. I'm going to give you both that. What is the PeaceTech Exchange? And I'm going to hit on that question about democratization because it's an excellent one. And it really is one of those things that have changed dramatically across the last 10 to 20 years, frankly, with the ability of every single one of us to, you know, be armed with cell phones, internet connections, and so forth. But the PeaceTech Exchange recognizes that there's been a lot of tech diffusion around the world. Even in the bottom 3 billions, we find people We find people with cell phones, and not only with cell phones, we find them feeding their airtime on their cell phones before they're feeding their bellies, because these things
True.
Have become invaluable tools for everyday life all over the world, even in the most impoverished places. So anybody tells you, internet connectivity is not there, I'm just telling you, it's everywhere we go. Now, second of all, a real story that I think makes this democratization come alive is when we were doing a PTX, a Peace Tech Exchange in Mumbai, India, where we were asked to bring in our process to help in the problem of gender violence, violence against women and girls in Mumbai.
Right.
And the Peace Tech Exchange typically is a 3 to 5 day training where we come in, work with local technologists, and work with local civil society organizations. So maybe the first time anyone has ever got them in the same room to wrestle a common problem together. So we had all these organizations working on gender violence or gender equity in Mumbai, and we had all these local technologists, and they really wanted to help one another, or to understand one another, I should say. So the task at hand that we tee up is, how can you use low-cost, off-the-shelf, readily available tech to help counter gender violence in Mumbai? And
sure.
We got a lot of ideas, a lot of techniques. There's, you know, set up this website called Hollaback, which has been set up in many other countries, set one up here in order to counter gender violence. There's a lot of techniques, but Bart, the one that I will never, ever forget, the moment I will never forget, is when a group of 13-year-old girls from the Dharavi slum.
13-year-old girls?
13-year-old girls from the Dharavi slums of Mumbai, one of the poorest places on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
Bart, one of those girls show up at our meeting and say to us, we'd like to show you what we've created already to counter gender violence in our communities.
I
and we go,
this.
What? And they get up and demonstrate a mobile app for the cell phone that they have
of
created
course.
Using the free MIT app maker. They downloaded it with the help of a mentor. They downloaded this. They created an app where you push one button on your phone. It sounds an alarm when you're in danger. It sounds an alarm.
Right.
It sends a message to your network, parents, family, friends, and it locates you. Simple,
right.
But effective.
Right.
And
fabulous.
This is...
Oh, I love it.
Right. Now, if that is not a perfect example of democratization, these are not engineers. These are not geeks.
No.
These are not, you know, sophisticated computer scientists or anything like that. These are ordinary folks actually who have almost nothing in the way of resources, and they direct it towards creating an app like this for their community. That is the democratization we see every day in Peace Tech Lab, the availability that anyone anywhere has today to push a button. With the push of a button, you can send a message, an idea. You can send funds. You can create a business. You can send these things to the other side of the world with the push of a button.
Amazing and wonderful to behold that the technology, the simplest technology, is getting out. And what do the great mass of people want to use it for? They're using it for peace. If you have just joined us, you're listening to The Art of the CEO, which every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time floats shamelessly across the mightily misunderstood realms of cyberspace, where you may listen to this and all our episodes by visiting theartoftheceo.com. That's theartoftheceo.com. As an added avenue, by the way, you may also join us on C-Suite Radio Station. We're proud members of C-Suite, where the best in business merge their experiences with your own inventive dreams. So just tune in to csuiteradio.com to hear also all our Art of the CEO episodes. Now, Sheldon, I think this is marvelous that you have been able to enhance these people. And I think that, but on the logistics side, I'm curious. You are coming into an area that is either depressed or unsettled, and so often violent with war zones. And heaven knows there's enough war zones to choose from, alas. But how do you select a target for your exchange hub, and with whom do you connect, and how do you already work in this unsettled nation?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, Bart. I mean, we are an independent nonprofit organization. We had been spun out from the United States Institute of Peace 5 years ago. So we are an independent nonprofit organization, and we know that there are many conflict zones, fragile states where we could be doing work that would be useful and valuable, but we're limited, obviously, by the resources that we have. So we are we tend to go where we have found a funder who is interested in supporting our work, whether it is training civil society organizations in country so that those organizations who serve millions in that country can do more, better, faster at whether it's preventing gender violence or countering, fighting corruption or promoting inter-ethnic or inter-religious peace building or preventing resource scarcity, water, food security, those kinds of things that lead to violence. When there's a funder who is interested in that area, we are able to go there and do our work. Or some of the other things that we do, and we're seeing it right now. There's a Washington Post article you might have seen just this week about the growing humanitarian crisis in Cameroon. It looks like it could almost turn into another genocide there. And they referred to hate speech, online hate speech there, as being one of the things that are stoking the flames. And they cited our report that we had documented hate speech in Cameroon almost a year ago, and how it was escalating and how problematic it is. And so again, we found there a willing funder in the in a combination of foundations and social media companies, because both have a strong interest in figuring out how to pull hate speech content down as quickly as possible before it turns into violence.
Right.
So we're, again, the short answer, Bart, is it's resource dependent is the short answer.
Right.
And we hope that with in the future we'll be able to establish a kind of an agility fund. That's really our most pressing goal, an agility fund that would allow us to go to situations like exactly this Cameroon situation, which is growing every day, increasingly, it's worsening every day. So we could do things when we know where and when we know we should be doing them. That's one of our urgent needs.
Well, Sheldon, doubtless you have, I'm sure many of our listeners have been fired up by this. You've done, you've made, they want to get behind your efforts. So if you could tell us, if I wanted to lend my hands or open my wallet, how might I get in touch with the Peace Tech Lab and learn more and perhaps help more?
Oh, that's so nice of you to ask, Bart. I mean, really, first and foremost, our website, www.peacetechlab.com. PeaceTechLab, one word, .org, is the place to go, and there's certainly the opportunities to donate there. But beyond that, please sign up for our newsletter and also share your email with us, because there are other things. If people truly want to be part of the PeaceTech solution, if you will, the PeaceTech movement, we have so many things. For example, we're trying to compile a compendium, a database of all the best uses we see out there for technology in peace building. And you know, Bart, it doesn't make – those stories don't make the news very often, and that's why I'm very grateful to you for doing this show. Most of the news tends to focus on, oh, goodness – Facebook was used today in Sri Lanka and it led to riots in the streets, or ISIS has hijacked Twitter in order to get its message out. Those are the kinds of things that tend to dominate the news, and yet we know every single day somebody somewhere in the community is devising a clever peace tech solution that should be shared. So we'd love to have help in compiling that compendium. That's where we use a lot of volunteer help.
Great. And you are right, Sheldon. We are still stuck. Media, shamefully, is stuck in the old William Randolph Hearst model of what sells papers and gets people's attention. And that's all media. But it need not be, and you may, each of my friends listening, you have a chance to turn that around and bring the good things to light. Now, Sheldon is going to continue showing how the weapons of technology may be beaten into peace-building tools right after you and I take a brief sorbet from today's Feast of Wisdom, and as I will offer you a few utensils for today's feast. And the first utensil, as I always do, allow me to remind you that the good Lord has gifted you with the title and privileges of Chief Executive Officer of yourself. And since that's really the most important position you'll ever hold in your career, may I ask, will this be the day that you verbalize one enriching ideal in which you believe and allow it to filter into your daily conversations? Or will you continue to be frightened of others' opinions and let your beliefs lie silent? The choice, my friend, is truly yours. As a second utensil, I can sense you yearning to steep your lips into a little laughter and taste a scriptural recitation from the 102 Best Business Quips book. And so I am fumbling around here. This is number 21. Promotions go to that employee who is famed for making decisions fast, definite, and original. But if you own the company, it profits you better to be thoughtful, cautious, and right. What do you think, Sheldon? Are we business folks so caught up in our own lust for speed that we're putting our money behind the rabbit rather than the tortoise and chasing the wrong features, even if they belong to the right models?
I'd like to think of what we're doing as not a tortoise, but as the rabbits. Just you may be chasing the wrong rabbit.
All right, absolutely.
We are running as fast as we can. I can tell you that, Bart. Every single day, I have a dedicated group of people, both here in Washington and in Kenya, and a number of other staffers in other parts of the world. In California, one of our people are based. Someone else is based in Virginia, and every one of them is working flat out to try to scale this kind of peace tech work, because this is the right thing to be doing in these times. We'd love to say everyone has the power of peace tech, and we really mean that, and we're trying to channel it into where it's most needed.
And it's good to know, and it is uplifting, and I hope that you all will come away from this show with that ray of hope, because it is indeed out there. Just because it's not advertised does not mean it is not, as Sheldon is saying, fired up and going full steam. If you smirked a bit over that quip, by the way, we have them literally by the books full. Just visit bartsbooks.com and pick up your copy of the 102 or the 101 Best Business Quips, and your joviality quotient will rise, shattering the grim visage of all your fellow wage slaves at work and all that entails. And as a third utensil, we sumptuously spooned you the answer to last week's business quotation. That is the name of the individual who said, "If I had to live my life in anticipation of what others thought of me, very little would get done." Those words were spoken by none other than the American singer, comedian, and columnist Henry Rollins. So congratulations to all you winners, and stick with us, because later on in the show, blurting your way, comes another enriching quotation. And if you're among the learned souls who knows the author of that quote, simply scribble that sage's name down as you believe him or her to be and email it right off to info@bartsbooks.com. That's info@bartsbooks.com. And if you're correct, your knowledge will earn you a mind and soul soul-igniting gift, freshly disemboweled from the dungeons of Bart's Books bookstore. And Sheldon Himmelfarb will continue to show the art of defeating hate speech. We want to get to that right after I make this introduction to you of the company by whose good graces we are here today. And that firm is Prometheus Publishing. And now Prometheus Publishing would like to invite you, well, to take a look at a book that's really helped a great many women in their careers. Behind Every Successful Woman Is Herself is the title. And it's really a gem of a guide. It embraces all the thoughts of leading businesswomen. They were gathered together. We got from them the techniques, the disciplines, and those all-important attitudes for ladies who want their careers and ventures to soar meteorically. It makes an ideal gift as the holidays are coming up for any lady or gentleman who is in the business community. You may pick up your copy at bartsbooks.com bookstore. And while you're at bartsbooks.com site, by the way, click on the Prometheus Awards where you can hear today's guest, Sheldon Himmelfarb, and the other Prometheus Social Enterprise Awards honorees reveal how they have developed their inventive organization that is transforming our world for the better. Sheldon's talk is fabulous. It's one of the Torchbearer talks, and it celebrates hope. Tune in. Carpe diem, my friend. You are indeed worth it. And now with utensils in hand, let's turn our creative minds back to Sheldon Himmelfarb. Sheldon, I'm going to come at you with an opposing question. I mean, what's so great about peace? I mean, pushing for peace is really, that's the stuff of sissies and liberals and all those folks who would have us back down. We all know that war and gunboat diplomacy is good for our nation's business, and it protects our unique prosperity. And if my son or sister may be called upon to cover themselves with glory in the field of honor, well, it's inevitable. And we just can't afford to show weakness. Am I right?
Oh, wow. Yeah, where do I start, Barry? Jeez. I don't think anybody believes that a peaceful, stable, secure, and prosperous society is a show of weakness. Au contraire.
All right.
It's a sign of strength. And nor, by the way, am I naive, or is my organization naive. I want to make sure that folks here listening don't think that we don't need a very solid and strong national security apparatus and defense organization. It is a dangerous world, and I don't believe we're going to get rid of all the megalomaniacs and the beheadings that we saw under ISIS and all of that kind of all of those horrors. That's not going to be solved by more text message campaigns or more tweets or more chats, anything of that sort. However, by the same token, nor are we going to create a greater culture of nonviolence and peace building in the world with more boots on the ground, more airstrikes, more drone strikes. And what we're really saying is the balance of investment is woefully unbalanced, if you will. The fact that, you know, let me put it to you this way. The fact that we have a, you know, the Defense Department's budget is around $700 billion. The budget for all of diplomacy and development combined is, I believe, less than $50 billion. And then there is the budget for the nation's center for violence prevention, conflict prevention, and peace building, the United States Institute of Peace, and that is only $35 million. I think that gives you a very good sense of the disproportionate investments that we are making in the kinds of community-based, soft, smart power interventions that, by the way, You ask any of the former secretaries of defense. Bob Gates has been out there talking about this. Admiral Mullen has been out there talking about this. So many former secretaries of defense will talk to you about the importance of investing more in exactly the kinds of things we're talking about here, in empowering the people in these communities, like those Dharavi girls who are coming up with solutions to prevent violence.
I think it's so true, and I think that it is the white elephant that everyone sees. And one of the things you said very early on, I'd like to go back to, and you said that it allows us that for now technology allows us to strike preemptively, which is what, again, from admirals to people in the slums are calling for, preemptive peace. And one of the things that one of the examples of that is that we touched on was the squelching of hate speech, but before it flames into hate crimes. Could you tell us a bit, explain that a bit, how you monitor and then what? How do you squelch hate speech?
So it's really, really interesting, Bard, that, you know, this is almost, it's become a big topic of discussion within the last couple of years because of the speed and velocity, the velocity and the reach with which social media has enabled hate speech to travel, and
yeah,
that we're seeing instances of that hate speech sometimes being, you know, it's a diaspora person in the United States that's online spreading false rumors, hateful rumors about one tribe about to do something in country against another tribe. And it turns into, in country, it turns into violent action on the ground. This has happened in countless places. So there's been a fair amount of attention up at on this right now. But, you know, those of us who have been working in conflict countries, and I've been working in conflict zones, well, I guess since the Mesozoic era, and
I'm sure it feels that way.
This has been a problem as long as I've been working in these areas. So very early on, a lot of us thought it was important to be able. You can't counter it without identifying it. So we have invested in the lab a great deal. We have a wonderful program under the leadership of Althea Middleton Densner, who has been cataloging, breaking the code, if you will, breaking the code of hate speech in various countries, so that both the social media companies that need to pull down material quickly and the local organizations working there in country, on the ground, can identify the hate speech quickly and counter it with either through, as I said, pulling it down, or by working with influencers in the community who can work with the people that are spreading the hate. And that's the other very, very important strategy. But you'd be surprised, Bart, how coded hate speech is in various countries. It would seem like an innocent phrase to others, but when you're part of the whether it's a tribal conflict or religious conflict or an interethnic conflict, you know exactly what's being said and what you're being called on to do. More
daily. Yeah, so it's more than it seems. I will say in my own experience, when I was back in college, I subscribed to the Fiery Cross, which was a member of the newsletter of the KKK, and also to Black Panther News. And in reading both, I found a remarkable similarity and between the two in terms of the language. And although I'm sure I didn't pick up on all of the coding that was going on in them, now when you do this, when you were a filmmaker, you were able to put you brought people together from different sides. I know you did this in Bosnia and so forth, and it was. And you put a face to the other side, and that helped. Are you able to, in hate crimes, put a face to the spreaders? Is that part of the strategy or not?
Yes, you do. You certainly do. That's why it's important to do what we do, for example, in identifying hate speech the way we do it. So as opposed to, there's a lot of the technology companies are trying, obviously they have a very, very strong interest in creating tools, technology, algorithms to identify as much of this dangerous speech as possible and remove it as quickly as possible. But we add to that a lot of in-country, on-the-ground, local networks that help us create our lexicons of
yeah.
hate speech. And by doing that, by working with local organizations, they have that's why you need to go local. That's why you need to have these trust networks, because they are able to identify perpetrators better than we are, and are able to also find influential voices to help counter those the perpetrators. So, and by the way, Bart, some of these people are very public and open about it. We have many examples, for example, of folks in South Sudan or diaspora members in South Sudan who've gotten online, you know, visibly on Facebook live streaming or on YouTube calling for neighbor to come out and kill neighbor. And they're very visible and their names are available. You know,
they're
not
lurking
all
around, is what you're saying. Yeah.
I'm saying it's not all lurking around. There's plenty of lurking around. I mean, I do think that's one of the interesting challenges about the internet. The level of anonymity has so many implications. I know that some technologists, smarter engineers than I, have been wrestling with whether or not full anonymity as it stands today is the right answer for the long-term future of this platform, or whether there should be some sort of, you know, bounded anonymity. It's an interesting question that I think is being wrestled with in some quarters, but not talked about enough.
You know, it is something that recently in several of the news media, they were talking about efforts of people to identify people, asking Facebook to identify speakers and to also edit posts. And Facebook was loath to do this. I have an instinctive gut reaction to that stands against Foursquare against censoring anything. But I
right.
these
yeah.
are very difficult questions. And
they really are.
The,
I think it's a perfect example, Bart. Sorry if I didn't mean to interrupt, but a perfect example of how the pace of technology, the pace of innovation in technology, really has to a great deal. It's pretty obvious to most people. It's outpaced our ability to actually legislate, regulate, or effectively wrestle with the big questions that these kinds of innovations raise.
Sheldon, there's so much more I wanted to talk to you about. I want to talk about your Ground Truth Global and so many other things that you're doing. You're doing a great job. Alas, we are running out we're just plain running out of time, as all things happen. So I have one more question. That is, if I wanted to have Sheldon Himmelfarb come speak before my executives, my students, my organization, or I just want to find the best ways to blend my energies with Peace Tech Labs, how might I get in touch with you?
Great, Bart. Let me give this address, which we check every single day, which is info@ Peace Tech Lab, PEACETECHLAB, info@peacetechlab.org. And I really would welcome people's opportunities to get in front of various groups. I've done a great deal of that, and it is for me. It is as valuable for me as I hope it is for anybody that we're talking to, because as you can tell, what we do depends on having strong trust networks around the world. It also depends on having our finger on the pulse of what people are thinking and doing about both violence and the use of technology to counter violence or how it's being used to perpetrate violence. So I really, really would welcome those kinds of invitations. And as I said earlier, you know, we have really interesting opportunities to allow folks to participate in helping us build the peace tech movement and the peace tech industry that we see starting to emerge among companies out there that want to be part of the solution rather than the problem of ongoing instability, violence, 70 million immigrants, refugees in the world, so forth. So we welcome those kinds of contacts.
Thank you so much, Sheldon. It's been great having you on, and I hope folks will respond. It is something that we all need, and you really have enlightened us, and you've given us a great ray of hope. Thank you so much for coming on, Sheldon.
Thank you, Bart, and thanks to everybody who listened.
So, as we round out today's feast, I am Bart Jackson, your curator of business wisdom, leaving you with today's business quotation. And this one comes in the form of a cartoon caption. There's a scowling board chair who's glaring at his ambitious-looking board members, and he queries, "Honesty is the best policy." Okay, now what's the second best policy? And as a hint to the author of this one, this multi-decade cartoonist for the New Yorker magazine passed from us recently at 92 years young. And if you know the author of this quote, just write that name, author's name down as you believe him or her to be, and send it right off to info@bartsbooks.com to win an absolutely life and career changing gift from the dungeons of Bart's Books bookstore. And as a parting shot, in the words of my wife's husband, efficiency is the process of continually reducing the number of employees assigned to each task until it lapses into total incompletion. And then pointing to the salary savings with a great deal of pride. Sound familiar? And to you gleefully sharing our feast, I hope you've enjoyed the Art of the CEO show as much as Sheldon and I have enjoyed bringing it to you. And remember that you may download this and all our shows by visiting theartoftheceo.com. And finally to you, who have honored us with your time, may I say, as always, it has been a privilege. And I thank you.